This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. If you've been a kid or raised a kid in, the last four decades, you've no doubt heard Barry Lewis Pollisar. He's with me in the studio. He's been writing and performing children's songs like Don't Put Your Finger Up Your Nose for four decades. In 2007, 30 years after he wrote it, his song All I Want Is You was featured in the opening credits of the film Juno, which raised Pollisar's profile. Pollisar has also written dozens of children's books, and now he's written a book for adults, a thoughtful reflection on the first book of the Bible, Genesis. Barry Lewis Pollisar is here with me. Welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be back. Thanks.
You called this book Retelling Genesis. What moved you to write about Genesis?
The backstory is when my kids were younger, going to bar and bat mitzvah lessons, they were required to go to synagogue, and I told them that I would never drop them off at the door and leave, that if they were going, I would go with them. And I began reading the Bible, the Torah, for the first time as an adult, and I just had tons of questions. I would read things. I would think, man, did I understand that right? And I would go up to the rabbi after the service, and I would ask him questions. And the next thing I knew, I found myself in a Torah class on a Friday morning with all the other retirees, because who else can take up a class like that on a Friday morning? And as we were reading these stories, I kept thinking about the other characters, the characters that did not have a voice in Genesis. I mean, you hear the Adam and Eve story, for instance, from Adam's point of view. You hear Noah's story, but Noah had a wife, and she's mentioned but not even named in the story. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Wouldn't it be kind of fun to sort of take some of these stories and look at them from the secondary character's point of view? So it's not inventing new stories. A lot of Midrash, the tradition of writing new stories around biblical stories, invents things. I didn't want to do that. I only wanted to take the exact story of what happens in as described in the Bible, in the Torah, and interpret it from another character's point of view. It's not really a retelling in the sense of a new story, but it's a retelling from another point of view, which, of course, is very Talmudic. You know, on the other hand, there's another side to the story. Oh, well, there's another side to the story.
That's storyteller, poet, and songwriter Barry Lewis Pollisar here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his new book, Retelling Genesis. I'm especially fascinated by the women we hear from in Retelling Genesis who were just sort of lurking in the background. Read us part of the one about Eve's side.
Eve's side. I am the woman in the story and often blamed for this apple thing, but believe me, this was no ordinary fruit. This was the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God never told me not to eat from it, at least not directly. He told Adam. I wasn't even around yet when that rule was handed down. I was, after all, the last to be created, after the swarms of living creatures and the fowl that fly above the earth, after the great sea monsters and the winged beasts of every kind, after the cattle, the creeping things, and the wild beasts, after the shrubs and grasses, after Adam. God created all of these and pronounced them good. He saw that it was paradise and that it was holy, and then he rested. It was then that God told Adam not to eat from that tree, and only then did he cause Adam to slumber, and I was created. Just touching the fruit of that tree would kill me, I told the serpent. When that didn't happen, it was easy to assume that Adam had made the whole story up. That's the thing about adding extra rules and prohibitions. You build your fence too high, and you run the risk that it will fall from its own weight.
Where do you come off speaking for Eve or for any of these characters?
In my music for kids, in my songwriting and poetry for kids, it's often giving voice to kids, in especially kids that don't have a voice. In my early years, I think people sort of thought of me as the bad boy of children's music because I sang about nagging parents and mean teachers and
sticking your finger up your nose.
And things that generally didn't get written about, let alone said in children's songs. But I thought it was important to sort of provide a voice for kids that didn't have one. And so this book sort of is in that same tradition, not only the tradition of looking at things from a different point of view, which is very Talmudic, but also the tradition of just searching for truth and answers in letting lots of people speak. I've actually sat on this book for about 12, 13 years. I kept revising it, rewriting it, questioning who am I to even put this thing out. I think it has a real interesting place in the sense of looking at life from other points of view, from other perspectives. And so I finally just decided, well, I'm just going to put it out there and see what happens. I don't do this kind of work normally. Mostly I'm in schools and libraries, working with kids, singing, writing.
How did you choose which stories to tell, to retell?
Well, I certainly took my favorites, and a lot of the genesis, if I can use that word, was in this Torah class that I took at our synagogue, where we talked about, as we read these stories, you know, we read the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac, the obvious or attempted sacrifice of Isaac, and then the obvious question is, well, where does that leave Isaac? What is Isaac's point of view on this? There's nothing in the Bible that talks about that. It just says, you know, an angel came down and sort of stopped him at the last minute and offered a ram instead, and then that's it. There's no more about that.
And is Isaac just fine with that?
Yeah, well, so the obvious question comes up in class. Well, what about Isaac? And there's actually a lot of sort of rabbinic discussion about some of these characters. I mean, he doesn't say much at all throughout the Bible, and there's some discussion that maybe he really was traumatized by this and lost his voice. I mean, yes, there are other stories that would be equally good. I just sort of wanted to limit myself to those 13 that I picked. I mean, because that's a whole book in and of itself.
These beautiful, vivid illustrations that were done by your wife, Ronnie Lynn Palisar, make me wonder, did she have a role in choosing
No, she didn't. No, I mean, I pretty much gave her the manuscript afterwards. Certainly, she reads everything I write, my children's books, my children's poems. I mean, she's a great critic because she's totally honest with me in terms of what's good and what she doesn't think works. Obviously, she was involved in the editing process over that period of 12 years. And by the way, this is actually not my first sort of foray into writing for adults, because I also did a Passover Haggadah called Telling the Story, and a Passover Haggadah Explained, which goes through the Passover traditions and not only goes through each step that you would normally do in a Passover Seder, but also explains and gives a sort of spiritual background for each step. So my daughter did the artwork for that book, and then my wife did the artwork for this book.
Your website is terrific. You've got, as I understand it, all your children's books there to download for free, to read for free. And you've done that now with Retelling Genesis also. Why make your books free on your website?
Well, I've been very fortunate in having a wonderful and fun and supportive career for 40 years. I mean, I've made my this is the only thing I've done for 40 years is write songs and work in the schools and libraries and do concerts and write poems. And 40 years ago, I don't think I would have ever imagined that I could sustain myself doing this.
It's not obvious that one can.
Yes, it's not the typical job. I mean, as I said, often it beats a real job. But it's been successful. And many of my schools that I visit are Title I schools, low-income schools, where I'm being brought in to talk to the kids about being a writer, to share my songs, to share my books. But many of the kids don't come from families that support reading, that support buying books. And so if I'm doing my job right, I'm exciting all these kids about reading and reading my books and my poems and hearing my songs. So I felt very strongly that I just wanted to put that stuff out there, because every kid has access to a computer, whether it's in the library, whether it's in the classroom or at home. And so this makes everything that I've written available for free, digital forms of my books, MP3s of my songs, and I even have recorded all of my stories and poems and have posted them as oral readings, so kids can actually read my books, read my song lyrics, read my poems, and hear me read them alongside of them as a learning tool. I do sometimes worry that it's putting myself out of business, but again, I'm 60 years old now. I'm not that young, hungry 20-year-old songwriter, so I feel it balances out. Very, very first time I was interviewed 40 years ago, a newspaper person asked me, what is your goal in life? What do you want to happen with your music, to your career? And I said, truthfully, I think I want what any writer would want, which would be to find an audience, to have my work enjoyed and appreciated.
I love it. Thanks for talking to us about it.
Thank you. My pleasure.